Hey, Smutters.
Hey, guys.
Stop.
No, I'm pissed.
No, why?
Because you're censoring me.
I know.
There's nothing wrong with what I said. So I'm just going to be over here in my corner playing Angry Birds because you're an asshat.
I'm not an asshat. Stop pouting.
I'm not pouting. Yes, you are. I'm not talking to you.
That's the same thing as pouting. So, how was your week?
It's been very, very long.
All right, y'all. So, anyway, this is like the fourth time we've had to redo it, so he's mad at me at the moment. But, yeah, it has been a long week. Troy...
Because you're censoring me. You don't censor greatness.
You are fantastic. Yes, Troy has been working super long hours, and... I can't seem to wake up ever.
Ever.
So, last night...
I don't know what that
means. Last,
wink, wink.
Last night... What the fuck? Last night, Troy had came home and he took a nap and he woke up and I fell asleep. And then I woke up and he's like, we need to do the episode. And literally fell asleep holding my phone and started snoring. Like, I could not get up for anything. It was bad. But what were you talking about the plane?
What plane?
That they lost?
I don't know. You tell me.
Seriously?
Greatness cannot be censored.
Tell your story.
Well, I was fine. It was just about how so ridiculous everything is right now. Because literally, we lost an $80 million jet and had to reach out to the public to say, hey, if you find our jet, please call us. Really? $80 million jet.
They set up a hotline for
yes.
it.
Yes. Now, granted, the that just opened. The Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace ads for jets and stuff. It was hilarious. But seriously, guys, I mean, I still don't know the whole story because I haven't been able to read into it that much. But evidently, the pilot ejected, and it was on autopilot. So I don't understand why he would have done that. Doesn't make sense to me. If you guys know, let us know because I'm too tired to really look it up. But really, we... lost an $80 million jet.
Well, also the fact that gets me, they cleared the airways for 2 days. Like, they weren't able to fly.
Yeah, which is strange.
So, I feel like there's more to this story than what they're telling us.
Aliens.
I kind of think it was aliens, since they, wouldn't let anybody go in the air.
The thing is, there's so much talk about aliens right now. And the coolest thing, of course, I always thought this anyways, that we watched the other day is about octopuses being aliens.
Yes, that is so cool.
It's really kind of neat if you think about it because of the way they are.
Don't they have a DNA that does not
come
from
every
this world?
Tentacle is separate. Like it's connected, but they all have different
brains.
Like DNA type stuff.
Oh, I did not know that.
It's really cool. Anyways, so other than that, I don't really know of anything interesting that's happened this week. Except for the iPhone 15 launch. It actually wasn't as expensive as they all said. But everybody's rushing out to get it.
Really?
Guys, it's just a little bit better of a camera.
I'm not a phone person.
I guess OnlyFans people would want it for better cameras to see people's buttholes. But
are you getting a better phone?
Most definitely.
No, I've never been a phone person. The last phone I had, they were literally like, we have to turn your phone off because it's so old.
because they were switching networks.
Yeah, they were.
911 or something.
Yeah, they gave me a phone to use because I did not want to switch phones. Like, I liked my phone. It worked fine for me. But I'm just not into the phone stuff.
Yeah, there's some people that just have to have... I mean, which is fine if they got the money and want to spend it on that.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I used to be that way, but, I don't really care anymore. But,
yeah.
Other than that, for me. Have you heard any other interesting news?
I have not. Not really.
I do know that it has been getting a little bit cooler, which means it's closer to spooky season.
Oh my gosh,
so
yes.
So that is nice.
Yes. And you guys, we watched the last Insidious.
Last of the Mohicans.
The last Insidious. And we were so excited about it because we had watched all the movies back to back to back to back. And they were so great. And we kind of knew that the last one wasn't going to be that good because there wasn't much more they could do with it. It was just closure, I guess. And that's exactly what it was closure. Like, it was not that great.
No, I didn't. I wasn't too into it. But also, I was really tired, too, so.
Yeah. We also watched a movie called Nefarious.
Yes, I love Nefarious.
That was a fantastic movie, and I'm obsessed with it. Like, if you get a chance, I had never even heard of it, and Troy was like, oh, I've really been wanting to see this movie. So we watched it, and oh my gosh, y'all must watch it. It's a must. But anyway.
What's the story about tonight?
The story is about cursed objects.
Ooh.
Yes. And I have noticed in a lot of episodes that we do, we always somehow talk about the Titanic.
Did you know that the Titanic's pool is still filled with water?
Stop it. But the thing is, the Titanic does make an appearance in one of our stories tonight. And you know who else makes an appearance in one of our stories tonight?
Cartman Brawl?
No, take a guess. He's your favorite person.
Buff Nuts.
Buff Nuts makes an appearance. So, let's go ahead and get started because I've got several stories marked. Ashlyn even picked one of them out.
Okay.
So.
Oh, also, there's other exciting big news.
What?
You're starting a YouTube channel.
We have started a YouTube channel and I announced it last week, but I will post it again on Instagram that the YouTube channel is up and running. And hopefully soon, Troy and I are going to start doing actual videos for the podcast.
I'm going to be rapping.
Yes, for your rap career.
Yes.
But I would like to get the videos up and going when we can. It's just normally we've got a lot going on in the house, so we're always scared of who's going to pop in while we're recording. So we'll get that up and going as soon as we can, you guys. But we do have...
Just make sure you hit like and subscribe, please.
Yes, we definitely need those likes and those subscribes. So, the first cursed object we're going to do tonight is the Hope Diamond.
You think so?
Oh, yes.
You sure about that?
I am.
You sure about that?
What are you doing?
You sure about that?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, have you not seen that?
No.
God. You live under a rock.
That's probably when I would have skipped, because that does not sound funny. Doesn't sound funny to me at all. Okay.
It's almost spooky season.
Okay, we're good.
You sure about that?
Stop.
Okay.
I don't think that's funny.
You sure about that?
I'm 100%. So it was ripped from the eye of a cyclone. Did you see me, Jeff? I thought you were trying to burn my hair.
Wow. Okay. You act like I abuse you or something.
I do. You always try to burn me.
You're so weird.
Okay.
I'm going to do it now. You least expect it. I'm going to set you on fire.
Okay, we've got to do this story. It was ripped from the eye of a cyclopean Hindu idol in India. It ended the French monarchy. It was the ruin of members of the new American aristocracy. The people who have owned or worn it have been ripped apart by dogs, shot, beheaded, pushed over cliffs, starved to death, and drowned aboard sinking ships.
Okay. So, the Hope Diamond is obviously a big thing in the movie Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
So, was it really, like, owned by an individual? And did it come from England? Was it a United States thing? Like, I need more history on this.
Oh, we're going to go through the history on this for sure.
Okay.
Okay. It is called Suicides, Madness, and the Death of Children. It killed Rod Serling. It inspired the fictional Heart of the Ocean gym.
Rod Serling?
I don't know who that is. And look it up for me. It inspired the Heart of the Ocean gym in the Titanic. It is the Hope Diamond, and it is cursed. Weighing 45.52 carats.
Yeah.
The Hope Diamond is the world's largest blue diamond. It is the platonic ideal of
Aren't
a cursed...
Aren't all blue diamonds like called blood diamonds?
What? I don't know.
Wasn't there a movie about that? It's, I think it was based in Africa, but I think it was...
I don't know what, like, I've heard of blood diamonds, and I feel like because a lot of blood was shed trying to get them.
Wouldn't they be red, though?
I don't think it has to do with the color, really. Look that up, too, please.
Okay, I will.
You're playing Angry Birds.
Yeah,
awesome.
But I'm almost beat this level.
Okay, so it is the largest blue diamond. It is the platonic ideal of a cursed object. It has an exotic origin and a history that spans centuries. Yet it is small enough to fit into a pocket, to steal, to lose, to disappear. It is valuable enough to be bought and traded and stolen in the rarefied atmosphere of throne rooms and private jets. Many have owned it, and the chain of provenance sometimes reads like an expensive game of hot potato. And of course, tragedies have paralleled and entwined its entire timeline. However, all of the commonly circulated claims mentioned in the first paragraph of this chapter, except for the Titanic bit, are unverifiable.
Was it really on the Titanic?
I don't think they're
you
sure.
Need to look that up for you.
No, you've got other homework to do right now. But that doesn't matter. The real story of the Hope Diamond, including how it came to be considered cursed, is just as fascinating. Its story starts 1 billion years ago, some 100 miles below the Earth's crust. Primal forces crushed carbon into a hunk of crystal. It was a common process at the time, but something rare happened in this case. The element boron fused into the crystal structure, turning the gem a deep ocean blue. Eventually, volcanic activity forced the rock close to the surface of what would one day be called India, where it was pulled from the ground hundreds of years ago by India's legendary mining industry.
Could you imagine finding that?
No, not like, at all.
Like, there was that girl, that young girl, that just, that was in the news a couple weeks ago. She found a huge rare diamond in Yellowstone or something like that, or Arizona, somewhere like that. But it's like, yeah, it's not yellowish. It's a different kind of color, but it's huge.
How
like,
does
just
that
happened
happen
to find it. I don't know. I would love to know, though.
Yes. India was once thought to be the only source of diamonds on the planet. And that's why pioneering French merchant named Jean-Baptiste Tavernier made 6 epic journeys there in the mid-17th century. On one of those journeys, he came into possession of a heart-shaped 112-carat rough-cut blue diamond that came out of the Collar Mine. The stone would eventually be called the Tavernier Violet. Violet was a synonym for blue at the time. Contrary to the legend, he attained it not by stealing it from the eye of a god, although he saw plenty of jewel-eyed gods in the Temple of India, but through the usual channels of trade. Tavernier sold the stone to King Louis XIV of France, along with more than 1,000 other diamonds. But that large blue gem was obviously special. It accounted for about 25% of the price of the entire lot. Tavernier would go on not to be ripped apart by dogs, as some say, but to relax from his life of adventure near the shores of Lake Geneva. He would later come out of retirement, but still live comfortably into his 80s. Louis XIV also lived a long life. Under his watch, the future Hope Diamond was cut down and refined into a more glittery and fashionable 67 carats. By then, it was called the French Blue and was considered an important part of the French crown jewels. Those jewels were passed down without much drama until the reign of King Louis the 16th, who held the throne during the French Revolution, an uprising that eventually left him and his wife, Marie Antoinette, without their heads. The Hope Diamond was blamed by some for Marie Antoinette's death, although she almost certainly never wore it. She loved diamonds, but the French blue was reserved especially for her husband. It was set in an insignia for one of his orders and only removed once for scientific examination. The French monarchy dissolved after the revolution, and in 1792, the French blue was stolen and lost to history temporarily. Scholars believe that the French blue was used to bribe Charles Ferdinand, the Duke of Brunswick, Germany, not to invade France. Much of Europe was terrified that the revolution in France would spread to their countries and had armies at the ready to help stifle potential conflict. However, it happened. The diamond surfaced again 2 decades later, this time in England, in the possession of a gem merchant named Daniel Eliason.
I would love to know the story of how it went from there to there.
Right? It sounds like a movie. It had been cut down again, this time to 44 carats, the size of a walnut.
Do we know where all the other pieces went?
No. That's the thing. Like, what do you do with the rest of those?
I don't know.
So,
I guess you can't ever come clean about it. I mean, because it's owed to somebody.
Right. So, let's see. So, he cut it down, but it was to disguise it from Napoleon, who would have wanted to reunite it with the French crown jewels. From there, it came into possession of King George IV of the United Kingdom for the first time. But by 1839, it belonged to a wealthy London banking family named Hope. And that's how it got a name that seems straight out of the K Jewelers marketing department. Thomas Hope brought the Hope Diamond into the clan, where after his death, it bounced down like a game of expensive pinball through the heirs and contested wills and bankruptcies. From the Hope family, it went to a jewelry firm, which sold it to Sergeant Habib on behalf of the Sultan of Turkey, who then ran into financial trouble and sold it yet to another jewelry firm. In 1920, Pierre Cartier got his manicured hands on it in Paris. And we mostly have Cartier to thank for the curse. By this time, massive diamond mines had been discovered in South Africa. Diamonds had been far more attainable, and not just for the super rich. Within a few decades, everyone was expected to buy a diamond ring for their fiancé, a tradition that continues to this day because, you know, diamonds are forever. Gems were becoming mainstream. Cartier wanted to sell his blue diamond to a member of the emerging wealthy class of the United States, and he knew that to distinguish the diamond in the market and command a higher price, it needed a story. So he marked the diamond up both in cost and with a curse. It wasn't hard. A few spurious newspaper articles had already gotten the ball rolling, and the idea of cursed gems was becoming more widespread due to popular novels such as Wilkie Collins' The Moonstone and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Sign of the Four. Cartier also gussied up its presentation, surrounding it with 16 small white diamonds and creating the look of the Hope Diamond that we know today. Cartier's story of this cursed gem caught the fancy of Evelyn Walsh McLean and her husband Ned of Washington, D.C. The McLeans bought it for $180,000, or $4.5 million in today's time.
How much?
$4.5 million.
Seems low.
It does, right? During her decades of ownership, Evelyn wore the diamond to countless parties. Sometimes she displayed it on her head in a tiara, sometimes around her neck, and sometimes she even let the dog wear it. She had it blessed by a priest, temporarily pawned it to gather ransom for the doomed Lindbergh baby, and talked freely and amusedly about the curse. When her 9-year-old was struck by a car and killed, the New York Times couldn't help but mention the gem in their reporting of the tragedy. Eventually, Ned and Evelyn's relationship ended in divorce. Ned wound up in the sanitarium, and another of their children killed himself. In other words, their lives ended exactly how you'd think the lives of people who brazenly owned a cursed gem would end. After Evelyn's death in 1947, the Hope Diamond was picked up by the American jeweler, Harry Winston, along with the rest of her jewels for about $1 million, roughly $11 million today. He toured the Hope Diamond around North America before finally donating it to the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in 1958 for a big tax break and the dream of kickstarting a collection of American crown jewels. And that's where it is today, from the mantle of the earth to the capital of the United States. The Hope Diamond is displayed in the Janet Annenberg Hooker Hall of Geology, Gems, and Minerals in the Smithsonian. What do you think?
I mean, it's cool. I just wish I knew more about it other than just what's there, you know?
Oh, I know. Like, the full story.
Yeah, and where the other pieces are and stuff like that. So, did everybody who owned it die?
Eventually. I mean, as a matter of fact, Louis the 14th that owned it actually died of a terrible case of gangrene. And then Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette were both beheaded. So, you know, I feel like it was kind of cursed, you know. The French Revolution was nothing to really wag your finger at, I guess, you know. I don't know what to stop it.
So. Wag your finger. Wow. Wag your finger. Okay, that's a new one.
That's a new one. So.
What the hell is that? Alien.
I don't say I want one. What is that? Next we have, and our beautiful little girl picked this out. That's our boxer that's crying, y'all. What is he crying about?
He's a boxer.
Okay. The next story is about the Black Angel.
Should I let him out, you think?
Yeah, go ahead and let him out so he'll stop that, because I just gave him water. Okay, so the next story is about the Black Angel. It was once an 8-foot-tall, shimmering bronze memorial to a young son and a dear husband. Today, it is a blackened horror of a figure with a deathly curse. You can say hi to it during the cemetery's open hours. Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, Iowa was established in 1843. It covers about 40 acres, is Protestant, and is full of the usual plain rectangular tombstones and dead people. Nothing too out of the ordinary and nothing much worth mentioning as far as cemeteries go, except for the giant black angel dominating the landscape of terrifying the visitors. Angel statues in cemeteries are extremely common. There are millions of them spreading their stone wings across the dead in America and Europe. So many, in fact, that the wondrous image of a person with feathery wings has become a bland sight as a rectangular tombstone in a cemetery.
You said the Oakley Cemetery?
Oakland.
Oakland, okay. Yes, I was about to say, is that the Oakley, where like Annie Oakley was?
Oh.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. But not the Black Angel. The Black Angel has transcended blandness by going full on spooky, and being full on spooky in a cemetery has earned it an abundance of creepy legends. It also, strangely enough, makes the statue better as memorializing the dead beneath its feet. People will forget a boring funerary statue, but they'll talk for generations about a scary one. The statue is 8.5 feet tall and stands atop a square pedestal that lifts it to a full 13 feet. It depicts a winged woman in a flowing dress, her head tilted down that her face is usually in a shadow. Her massive wings are odd, one extended out perpendicular to her body and the other drooping like it's broken. Her arms are aligned with her wings, giving the strange impression that she's wearing fake wings strapped to her arms. There's something rounded and clay-like about her features. She looks like she belongs in a fantasy cemetery in a Tim Burton movie instead of in the real death cemetery in Iowa. The bronze artwork was crafted by Mario Corbell, a Czech sculptor based in Chicago. When it was placed in the cemetery in the early 1910s, it shone golden and glorious. Rodina Feldevertova is inscribed on the front of the stone pedestal, which means the Feldevert family in Czech. It is accompanied by a tall stone carved in the shape of a tree trunk. This Iowa plot is the lasting work of Teresa Feldevert, a Czech midwife. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing that name. I feel like I am. The stone tree came first and was planted to memorialize her son from her first marriage, Edward de Lazal. He died at age 18 after contracting meningitis. It was the second son she lost. The first, Otto, died 2 weeks before she moved to the United States. Childless and husbandless, Teresa left the Iowa City and lived in a few different places before ending up in Eugene, Oregon, where she met Nicholas, whom she eventually married. He preceded her in death and left her somewhat wealthy. One of the first things she did with that money was commission the angel sculpture. She ended up fighting with Corbell because she wanted the tree trunk gravestone to be incorporated into the sculpture of the angel. But in the end, they were kept separate. Regardless, the angel became the repository of the remains of both her son, Edward, and her husband. Finally, in 1924, Teresa herself was laid to rest beneath the angel she had commissioned. Although the memorial bears only her birth date, it's a beautiful story. Each family member succumbing to the inevitable and then being reunited beneath a shining statue for all to see. But then the angel aged, and the red-gold bronze oxidized to deep black, as if dark forces tainted it, corrupted it, cursed it. Normally we call those forces time and weather, but in this case, because of the statue and the strange angle of its wings and the fact that it doesn't fit in with the rest of the cemetery, the change in color seems malevolent. Some say it was the addition of Teresa's ashes that cursed the statue, that she had cheated on her husband, and that the glowing angel looming above the loving family could no longer take part in the ruse. However, the angel started turning black within 10 years of being installed while Teresa was still alive. The black angel was accrued as many stories as there are paranormal books and websites. The most common story is that if you touch the statue, you'll die. And for whatever reason, touching is often specifically called out as kissing. Also, if a pregnant woman crosses through the shadow of the black angel, the woman will miscarry. A man is said to have gone mad after breaking off the angel's thumbs, and in fact, she is missing a few digits. Another myth is that if a virgin is kissed in front of the statue, it will restore the black angel to her previous glowing form. So.
That's pretty cool.
Yes, that is the black angel.
The black angel.
Now, we have two more, and I'm saving the best for last because I know you're excited about.
You know I am, girl. Nuts. You get it, girl.
So, the next one we're going to talk about is the Crying Boy paintings. So, there's bad art, and then there's bad art. The former doesn't conform to conventional ideas or aesthetics, creativity, and skill. The latter burns down the house of anyone who hangs it above their mantle. A good example of this second type is an infamous series of European paintings, all called The Crying Boy. This cursed object, the story of it, is relatively recent. It comes from the 1980s, the same decade that told us Smurf merchandise was full of demons and rock bands were brainwashing listeners by hiding satanic messages on their albums. It was a fascinating decade of modern myth-making. So on September 4th, 1985, the British tabloid The Sun published an article entitled Blazing Curse of the Crying Boy. The story was republished from a regional rag, Rotherham, which had run the story 2 days earlier. It was the perfect eye anchor of a headline, but the article that followed delivered on its promise. The story centered on a tragedy suffered by the Hall family. A large section of their house had been gutted by flames except for one item, a cheap department store painting of a teary-eyed boy. Now that in itself wasn't the kindling for the leg in. After all, fire is fickle. In a house turned ash, something inevitably survives. What fanned the flames was a quote from a fireman at the scene. He asserted that the artwork was one of many such mass-produced crying child paintings that was always seemed to survive fires, and that the fire department had amassed some 50 examples of them since the 1970s. So every time, basically, that a house caught on fire, if somebody had that painting, the painting always survived the fire.
Huh. Well, that's pretty damn interesting.
So, three astounding ideas can be taken from the fireman's assertion. One, that these generic paintings had been surviving fires for more than a decade. Two, that houses with these paintings seemed prone to fire. And three, the powers of the portrait didn't lie solely with the original, but could be transferred through copies. In a world overrun with mass-marketed goods, this is probably the most horrifying idea of the three. But the takeaway, at least according to The Sun, was clear. Every print of the crying boy was cursed. The idea terrified a number of the owners with the reproductions. After The Sun invited readers to send in their prints, it received 2,500 renderings of sad children from across England. They weren't all of the same boy. Some included multiple crying children, and sometimes the subject was a girl. But all of the paintings depicted children who apparently cried tears that could extinguish fires. The Sun burned all the portraits on Halloween, and afterward the paper published a photo of the blaze attended by a blonde woman in a fire hat and jean shorts. One of its page three girls. The legend grew from then, cultivated over years by both media coverage and public interest. A backstory for the subject of the original painting was fleshed out. Reportedly, the boy's name was Don Bonillo, and he accidentally killed his parents in a fire in their home in Spain. Fire followed the boy wherever he went, giving him the nickname Diablo. Orphaned, the boy was kept and abused by a priest, and then also abused by the artist who painted his weepy portrait. His short life ended in a car explosion in the 1970s. An iconic crying child can only have a sad life, after all. The child was never identified, and as was already mentioned, there's no single child subject. Multiple versions of these paintings featured different crying children. As for the painter, Giovanni Bragolin is a common signature on the crying child paintings, but Bragolin doesn't exist. At one point in the chain of lore, it was hypothesized that Bragolin was a pseudonym for another painter named Francho Seville, but Francho Seville doesn't exist either. Both Seville and Bragolin were found to be pseudonyms for a Russian doll of a Spanish painter named Bruno Amadio, who did exist. He painted lots of crying children portraits, copies of which were sold in department stores all over England. Complicating matters further, another artist, Anna Zinkeason of Scotland, was creating portraits of depressed adolescents and offering prints through the same channels.
Our dogs are so crazy.
Both were deceased by the time the curse rumors began to bubble up, and many of the extremely specific story details, especially surrounding the subjects of some of the paintings, were published by The Sun and another British tabloid, The Daily Mirror, both of which aimed to capitalize to the incendiary story to the fullest extent. So that is The Crying Child. What do you think of that one?
That's all right.
It wasn't, like, crazy like I thought it would be. And, y'all, I'm getting these stories from a book. It's called Cursed Objects, Strange But True Stories. And it's by J.W. Auker, if you want to check it out. But it's got a bunch of cursed objects. And I was just going to go through a couple of them. But I have saved the last one. And I'm sure the majority of you guys know this last story. Have you ever heard of this story? It's called The Dybbuk Box.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
We watched the Ghost Adventures episode on the Dybbuk Box. And this is one that I cannot figure out. And I have not read the story that they have in this, but I have listened to a lot of episodes about the Dybbuk Box. I've done research of my own, and we've also watched the Ghost Adventures on the Dybbuk Box. And let's see what they have to say about it, because this is a pretty fascinating story.
Let's hear it, girl.
In Jewish folklore, a Dybbuk is an evil spirit, sometimes defined as the soul of a dead person that has become perverted in its afterlife. Its name means to cling, and that's what it does. Saran wrapping itself to the soul of a living person to very bad ends. But when you stuff one into a box, that box becomes a cursed object in the most infamous Dybbuk Box story. The first Dybbuk Box story, in fact, is born not of ancient folklore, but of 21st century digital platforms and pop culture celebrities.
Well.
In 2001, a man named Kevin Manis visited an estate sale in Portland, Oregon to see if there were any nice pieces he could pick up for his used furniture business. The house belonged to a woman who had survived the Holocaust by escaping to Spain after the rest of her family was killed. In the house, Manis found a small wooden box about the size of a backpack. It was a portable wine cabinet that the woman had bought in Spain. It had two doors carved with clusters of grapes, large hinges, and a small drawer at the bottom. It was made so that when one door was open, so did the other and the drawer as well. A Jewish prayer was engraved on the back of the box. Manis bought it. Back in the shop, Manis discovered that he didn't just get a box, but a box full of stuff. Inside were two wheat pennies from the 1920s, a lock of blonde hair, a lock of dark hair, and a small granite statue engraved with the word Shalom. That's Hebrew for peace. A dried rosebud, a golden wine cup, and a cast iron candle holder with legs shaped like an octopus tentacle. The contents were mysterious, but they're pretty much irrelevant to the story. What is relevant is that bad things started happening to Manis after he acquired the box. His shop got trashed, and he started seeing shadowy forms, smelling ammonia, and having nightmares of a hag. Everyone he tried to give or sell the box to gave it back, including his mother, who suffered a stroke after he gifted it to her. Eventually, Manis put it together that the source of all the strangeness was a Dybbuk box. Here's the thing. I'm going to stop right there.
Okay.
Because it skips over a lot of the story. Now, he knew the Dybbuk box was strange, okay? And the fact that he kept trying to give it to his loved ones, like, he literally gave it to, like, his girlfriend, and she brought it back and was like, I don't want this. And then he, like, gave it to his brother and his wife, and they were like, we cannot have this in our house after a few days, because they smelled that awful smell and they were having terrible nightmares. So everybody he gave it to brought it back. So then he was like, you know what? I'm going to give it to my mom. So after all that, he gives it to his poor mom as a gift, you know? And it's like, he sounds just awful. So stories like this usually end with the owner dying or with the object disappearing or winding up in a museum. But this story took a twist that could only be possible in the modern digital world. In 2003, Manis posted the Dybbuk box for sale on eBay, which at that time had been online for about 8 years. Now, they skipped another part of the story too. After he gave the Dybbuk box to his mom, she had a stroke immediately after he left her alone with it. He came back and she, like, somehow let him know to get it away from her because it caused her to have a stroke. So then he's, like, going to sell it on eBay. In his description of the item, he went into extreme detail about his suspicions concerning the box and admitted that he was hoping somebody more knowledgeable than he about the paranormal could take it off his hands. He didn't even put a reserve price on it. The beat-up old box full of strange ritualistic items sold for $140. The buyer was a college student in Missouri named Osif Nietzsche?
Nietzsche.
I think that's his name. Whether Nietzsche was an expert in cursed objects or Jewish ghosts or wanted it for the story or heck to store wine is unclear. What is clear is what he recounted happening to him after winning the high bid on the Dybbuk box. According to Nietzsche, he and his roommates began to experience various annoyances, such as having sudden allergy-like symptoms, detecting strange smells, struggling from extended periods of torpor, and noticing their electronic devices dying often. Those strange happenings eventually escalated to hair loss and visions of dark, blurry things. In an interesting twist on the trope of sending something dangerous back from where it came from, Nietzsche listed the Dybbuk box on eBay again, complete with a new story of his experiences. This was in 2004, less than a year after he won the box. This time, it sold for $280. The third buyer was Jason Haxton. He was the director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine at A.T. Steele University, Missouri. Haxton claimed to have suffered various physical ills caused by the box, as well as receiving a big physical boost. He asserts that the box reversed the aging process for him, calling it his fountain of youth. He kept it in a wood box lined with 24-karat gold. Haxton raised the profile of this wine cabinet, writing a book about it in 2011, creating a website for the object, and discussing his paranormal purchase in interviews. He frames the chronicling of the box as a defense against the overwhelming number of requests for information he was getting about it once it was discovered that he was the owner. The box's reputation grew, and its story was fictionalized into a 2012 horror movie called The Possession, based in a large part on a 2004 Los Angeles Times article about the box by Leslie Gornstein. The movie credits include a production consultant nod to Kevin Manis, the owner who originally put the box on eBay. In 2017, Zach Bagans, star of the paranormal reality TV show Ghost Adventures, bought it for his Haunted Museum in Las Vegas. For more on the Haunted Museum, One source states that Bagans paid $10,000 for the internet-famous box, a price that is in line with some other high-profile purchase for his museum. The Dybbuk box became the star of Bagans' museum. It's feared on the paper ticket alongside the words, "The World's Most Haunted Object." Inside, the box gets its own room where it's displayed and imprisoned in a glass case, under a spotlight and surrounded by a protective double ring of salt and dried sage. So here's the thing. The final twist to the strange story involves the rapper Post Malone.
Post Malone actually kind of reminds me of the school desk in detention.
Well, he encountered the Dybbuk box while guest starring on an episode of Zach Bagans' Ghost Adventures in 2008. But subsequently, Post Malone suffered a series of high-profile misfortunes, including an emergency landing in a plane, a car accident, and a burglary. Not too long after, Bagans released infrared security footage showing Post Malone in the museum's Dybbuk box room. The clip has no audio in it, and the rapper seems disturbed and eventually shoves Bagans out of the room. The implication was clear. Post Malone was the latest victim of the cursed Dybbuk box. So I feel like that was just kind of a dickish move. Like, if you know something's wrong with it, don't try to sell it on eBay. Right. Like throw it in the ocean or something, you know? But that is the story of the Dybbuk box. And yes, I believe, I want to say that Post Malone and Zach Bagans like touched it or something. And that's when he had issues with his private plane and they had to do a crazy landing or something. But that was a big story that came out a while ago. So you can always watch the Zach Bagans Haunted Museum or watch the Ghost Adventures episode of the Dybbuk Box, because it does have Manus on there. And they end up putting him, if it's the right one, putting him in the room with it. And he starts acting all, like, gets in a trance and talking to it and stuff. It's real crazy. That's weird. Yeah. But it's a really good episode. So, there is that. Do you have anything you'd like to add or any knowledge on any cursed objects or anything?
Wedding cake.
Wow. That's hateful.
So true, though.
Okay. Well, that
No, but I will be looking up more on the Hope Diamond.
Yeah, because I would like to know more. I would like to... I wish they would do a movie about the Hope Diamond. That would be so cool. But, I don't think that was a true part of it being on the Titanic or anything, so...
Probably not.
But it does make for a good story. Anyway, well, it is spooky season, y'all. It is time to start layering up a little bit.
Not so much layering up, but it is time to definitely go to Home Goods and Target and these places and get your spooky stuff.
You had to mention Home Goods.
I know.
I'm so mad, you guys. So, here's the thing. Let me tell y'all this real quick. I'm obsessed with Selena Spooky Boo. I think she is just the greatest thing ever. And I was watching one of her videos today on YouTube. And she had gotten like a Home Goods haul and was showing what she got. Well, she got this pillow. And it was a sparkly ghost. Like, sparkles all over this ghost. And it was so cute. So I text Troy and I'm like, I must have this ghost. It's so cute and sparkly and I'm just going to die if I don't have it. So people ran and bought all the ghost pillows and are now selling them for like $100 a piece. I am so mad. It's like
Dwight on The Office where he buys all the princess
uniforms. Like I'm so mad. I want that ghost so bad. They even have hot pink ones. I just want the white one because it's going to be like a year-round couch decoration. And it's gone. You can't find them anywhere. And they're like, people have put them on eBay and Mercari and Poshmark and all that for $100. And
that sucks.
I am so upset. And then like I woke Ashlyn up. I was like, I need you to help me find this pillow. And she's like, it's ugly. Like she was being so hateful today. She's like, I'm glad you can't get it.
Typical teenager.
So mean. But yes, so I found something cool, and I guess everybody else saw the same video I did, and they ran out and got them, and they're gone. So.
And actually, one thing you always say about staying hydrated, now you can say stay hydrated, but also get hot chocolate.
Yes, get you some hot chocolate and some pumpkin spice.
Ooh.
Listen, I'm full-fledged basic bitch when it comes to pumpkin spice. I love pumpkin spice. So, anyway, you guys, thank you for listening to me ramble. I hope you learned something about some cursed objects. And you know, I looked up the word cursed today, and it means to irritate or annoy.
You're cursed.
I feel like it would mean like something more than that, you know? But anyways, thank you guys. We will come back with a super scary story next Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.
Carmen Bra.